Hello and welcome to A History of the United States, Episode 88, Cranston. In our last episode, we looked at how the Glorious Revolution played out in New England, following how it managed to completely destroy the ill-conceived Dominion of New England. The new political unit fractured. Plymouth was dissolved as a colony, being absorbed into Massachusetts, which was to be given a greater role within the imperial system. New Hampshire was allowed to break free of Massachusetts and the other colonies, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, East Jersey, and West Jersey, began to return to normal. So, today, I want to look at how this affected Rhode Island in particular. Firstly, let's go back a bit. Back to 1689, when news arrived that King James II had been overthrown by William and Mary. The hated Governor Andros was imprisoned, and the Dominion collapsed. A number of freemen met in Rhode Island and decided that the best course of action was to resume their government under the Royal Charter, and that all officials who had held a position when the Dominion came into effect should be restored. The old governor took charge for a couple of months, not wanting to deal with the military matters that were the overwhelming issue affecting New England at the time: the French and Indians. The deputy governor assumed control and wrote to William and Mary, asserting Rhode Island's loyalty and petitioning for the old charter to be confirmed. What followed was a particularly interesting period in the colony's history. In theory, the old government of Rhode Island had been restored, but in practice it was a little bit more complicated, by which I mean it was a lot more complicated. The votes of a few men, and a couple of proclamations, were not enough to restore the charter government. It needed more, and it couldn't get more. People were too fearful to enter into the restored charter government, fearing that they would be punished if the Dominion was restored when a decision finally came from England. Indeed, this was the outcome that King William wanted. Attendance at the General Assembly dropped off, and several towns did not take part in the new government at all. Finding someone to take over as full-time governor was a very difficult process. Taxes couldn't be properly collected, and the other aspects of administration dropped off too. Then, some in the colony actively opposed all this and wanted much stronger intervention from England. Meanwhile, England went to war with France. Back in Europe, Rhode Island was far from anyone's thoughts, and so the colony largely looked after itself. It established its own military, but it was very chaotic, and the assembly was unable to effectively assert itself. The first piece of news to come from England was that command of the militia be given to the governor of Massachusetts, which outraged the Rhode Islanders. The situation worsened and worsened. To all intents and purposes, government in Rhode Island completely ceased to operate. Deputies from many towns stopped going to the General Assembly, which struggled along. The government of the towns completely stopped, and the General Assembly tried to centralise control, but was not in a position to do so. The General Court of Trials did not sit for 4 years. Word did come, eventually, that the Charter government had received royal endorsement. There was much to do. The first problem to be dealt with was the financial situation. The General Assembly was reliant on the towns for money, and the towns simply didn't collect the taxes the General Assembly told it to collect. The colony was able to do little to fundamentally fix this situation, and the tensions between the towns that were causing it, but some money started to come enough for officials of the General Assembly to be paid. Some changes were made to the way the colony functioned, such as turning the General Assembly into a bicameral legislature, which reflected how Rhode Island had grown since its original charter. It took time, and a number of minor crises arose along the way. But by 1697, things seemed to be returning to normal. It was at this point that Samuel Cranston was elected governor. This is a major moment in the history of Rhode Island. Samuel Cranston would be elected governor annually for the next 30 years, until his death in 1727. To fully express the importance of this moment, I'm going to quote from Sidney James's Colonial Rhode Island, A History. Quote, "The Assembly probably did not realise that it was inaugurating a new era, surely could not guess that it was selecting the man who was to hold office longer than any other chief executive of an American colony or state. Cranston, however, proved to be what Rhode Island needed." Governor Samuel Cranston presided over a transformation of Rhode Island from a beleaguered cluster of villages to a flourishing agricultural province organised to aid the growth of Newport's trade. He did not launch new policies as much as extend, elaborate, and carry out those that had been sketched a few years before he took office. His outstanding accomplishment, the key to many things that followed, was to bring his colony into a working relationship with the imperial government in London while preserving its charter privileges. As he succeeded in doing this, it became possible to bring internal order to the colony and start settling old disputes with its neighbours. With hindsight, one can see that events had already started to move in directions that became significant during the Cranston years, strengthening and centralising the colony's government, separating towns from the management of the common lands, systematising law, even introducing traditional forms of Protestant Christianity, and reviving interest in learning, all had begun, although they had not proceeded far enough to yield many effects. Nor, in 1697, was there any reason for confidence that the direction would remain steady, or that the colony could keep its own government. Visible to the discerning were changes of even greater importance. The population was growing at a much faster rate than ever before, and shipbuilding was booming, with many vessels staying in Newport ownership. The town was suddenly beginning to fulfil its hopes of being a major centre of trade. During Samuel Cranston's long tenure of office, Rhode Island was reorganised to supply Newport's commercial ambition. Obstacles to expanding settlement were cleared away to increase the port's hinterland. Roads were pushed into the interior, often over local objections, to facilitate taking products of the countryside to a spate of new commercial centres around the bay, at which the goods could be loaded on small craft for transport to Newport. Laws were enacted by the colony and the towns to regulate commercial life. Raiding at sea, mostly legal, brought in goods and coin needed for the rising port. Ultimately, the colony inaugurated a daring policy of creating paper money to support a medium of exchange needed for the rising port. Rhode Island energetically extended its jurisdiction, although it won little of its territory still held by Massachusetts until somewhat later. If these changes were conceived in the interests of an aggressive trading centre, they were, nevertheless, congenial to the other towns in most respects, because the aspirations of Newport could be fulfilled only by development of its hinterland. To be sure, there were violent quarrels and embittered losers. Some private ambitions were thwarted in the reordering of government affairs. A as will appear, the Newport leadership took care to aid local interests on the one side while attacking on the other, to seek compromises and to avoid shutdowns. On the whole, political skill kept internal grievances from building into powerful combinations. As general prosperity advanced, individual rancours could usually be rendered powerless until they ceased to matter. End quote. So that's where we are, but just who on earth was Samuel Cranston? Well, he was born on August the 7th, 1659. His parents were John Cranston, a Scottish physician who became governor of Rhode Island, and Mary Clark, whose father had been president of the Rhode Island plantation in the 1640s, and his brother, Walter, also served as governor of Rhode Island. In fact, it was Walter whom Samuel succeeded. He spent his youth as a sea captain and earned a good reputation, before settling down as a merchant, although the lifestyle didn't suit him. As you might expect, given his family, Samuel was far more interested in public affairs. He then married Mary Hart, whose own grandfather was Roger Williams himself. This gave Samuel a connection to Providence, in addition to his own strong base on Newport. He doesn't seem to have had a particularly strong religious view. Some said he was a Quaker, in the manner of his uncle, Walter Clark, though he had a pew reserved for him once an Anglican church was built in the colony, which is where he baptised his children. His interests were genealogy and, curiously, astrology. Such is the man, and now onwards into his administration. The first matter to be dealt with was establishing the position of Rhode Island within the wider British Empire. Cranston was the first person to need to deal with this question. The colony had almost entirely been left to its own devices for the 17th century, if not entirely forgotten. It was a couple of settlements on Narragansett Bay, which were never important enough to gain attention. There was no commerce and no real connection via a royal charter or official of the Church of England. This had been fine when the colony didn't require attention, but the times were changing. As the question of the region of New England and the various colonies came up, as it had been doing due to conflicts with the French and Indians dominating the later part of the century, the simple answer from authorities was to lump Rhode Island together with Massachusetts. The most obvious form of this was the Dominion of New England, but there were others. Those in England still felt that the Dominion was a fundamentally good idea, but was poorly executed. With a few minor modifications, the premise could still succeed. If they started appointing some officials and gave control of the militia to Massachusetts, then everything could succeed. This was unpalatable to Rhode Island for obvious reasons. It had largely been created to defy obeying Massachusetts in the first place. Stopping this was the very first task that Cranston had to deal with. But we shall save that for our next episode. If you've enjoyed today's episode, remember that you can find lots more online. You can follow me on Twitter, at HistoryJamie, for some of the finest history-based humour on the internet, in my humble opinion. If you want to support the show, there are a number of things you can do. You can subscribe to the membership feed by going to thehistoryofpodcast.com and clicking on the PayPal subscription button. You can buy a History of the United States Volume 1 on Amazon, a book based on episodes 1 through 60 of this show. If you want to support the show for free, you can always leave a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.